Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Hey, this is Dave. Just want to let you know that we had some technical difficulties this week, so Curtis's audio isn't as clean as it normally would be. Might be some pauses and some skips along the way, so apologize for that in advance. We're reacting to week 6 on Roto-Viz Radio.
What's up, Roto-Viz?
Welcome into the Roto-Viz Fantasy Show. I'm Dave Cabin, joined by Curtis Patrick. He's back. We're two of the owners here at Roto-Viz, ready to break down this week 6 action. A lot of really fun games this weekend, I thought. Some blowouts, but I guess, you know, a couple of good games. In the later portion, you had New England and Dallas, which was a good game. And then Sunday night game, too, had some interesting twists and turns, too, as it played out last night.
It turns out that you do have to play, in most situations, you have to play a full 60 minutes or more of football to win. My Cleveland Browns wouldn't know anything about that. Perhaps the worst drubbing of the week, albeit at the hands of the Arizona Cardinals, who continue to just impress at every opportunity. They didn't need their head coach, their offensive coordinator, their GM, or their all-world defensive lineman to easily discard of my Cleveland Browns. So that was a little bit depressing. But like you said, from a fantasy perspective, tons of interesting player performances, other key headline injuries that will, you know, as we get into this middle third of the season now, I think it's really going to shape how leagues end up turning out as we head into the fantasy playoffs. Some really that are absent, and we don't know if they'll really come back until we're nearing the fantasy playoffs. So lots of intrigue, Dave, as we enter week 7.
Yeah, definitely a lot of situations that are going to make fantasy managers really need to sit down and plan out their strategy moving forward. But let's hear your player of the week.
Oh, this one feels really good. I'm going to stay. I feel like we've drawn lines between the AFC and the NFC on this show. So I'm going to stick in the AFC for the player of the week here, just in case you mention this guy amongst your notable NFC players that I'm thinking of. But let's shine a light on Jonathan Taylor. Jonathan Taylor, just 16 opportunities. Man, 16 opportunities, 28.8. Big plays, breakaways, that size speed combo that we all were salivating over as a prospect for Taylor, really shining through. The only thing is, when Taylor has games like he had this weekend, you know, 14 carries for 145 rushing yards and 2 touchdowns, even the most irrational of coaches who are beholden to some sort of self-inflicted RB committee, regardless of the talent on your roster, will have to eventually give Taylor more work. So Taylor does it for his fantasy owners in spite of, and we can get that weekly floor raised with more workload moving forward. But Taylor, the RB2 entering Monday Night Football trailing only Leonard Fournette.
Yeah, this is unbelievable. Yeah, absolutely.
The snoozer of the week.
Unbelievable. All right, the snoozer of the week. Oh, man, in the wrong sound of it. The snoozer definitely does not get applause. Snoozer of the week is a player on a team that's dealing with some injuries. Nonetheless, it's hard to make excuses for this player. And that would be Daniel Jones. 29 of 51, Curtis. 242 yards, 0 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, 4 rushing yards. For those of you at home, in many leagues, he did not get to 5 fantasy points. In fact, he might have been sitting out around 4.1 fantasy points. Not what you like to see. We might be talking about a couple of the players that he's throwing to a little bit later. But if you were in a league and you had to start Daniel Jones this weekend, I apologize for your weekend likely being ruined.
Yeah. I think really the New York Football Giants, that's a team on the verge of snoozing too. I mean, we there's no Saquon to get the excitement going. Kadarius Toney sick in the first quarter, and then you know abruptly had to leave. This whole front office, coaching staff, and many of the players are kind of in a deep slumber right now. So very appropriate because he's sharing that bed with you know a lot of dudes right now.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. All right, let's hit up some game notes. We are going to start in the NFC, and the team that we're talking about here is going to be the Seattle Seahawks. In that game last night was an interesting one with the Steelers. Alex Collins, so his last two games, 18 rushing attempts, 74 yards, a half a touchdown, and 2 targets for 13 PPR points. It's a pretty decent line for a guy filling in. Believe he had 20 rushing attempts last night. That solid work, Curtis. Another interesting thing is in the last two games, we've seen DJ Dallas get 4 rushing attempts, 3.5 targets. But I bring up the Seahawks because it looks like the team is going to be activating Rashad Penny from the injured reserve. Chris Carson should be out for at least 2 more weeks. It's interesting that before he went down, he was only averaging 14 rushing attempts and 1.5 targets per game. So I would have to imagine that we still see Alex Collins getting usage. It would seem, though, that there's a decent possibility that Rashad Penny gets back in this lineup, removes DJ Dallas from getting that low-level opportunity that he was having. I know that you had talked pretty poetically, if you will, about Rashad Penny. Got a lot of people jazzed up on him before the season. We're finally going to get to see another crack at it for him in 2021. How much do you think this might shift the tide in Seattle?
Oh, I'm so pumped. You know, Alex Collins has looked good, and that's actually even more encouraging when we think about Penny working his way into the lineup, because if a pedestrian player like Alex Collins can do that, Rashad Penny can do even more. Absolutely can do even more. He's a better athlete, and he's popped when he's gotten his chances. You know, it's not been a question of talent there. It's been a question of which is, you know, maybe the most important ability. I don't know if you saw this in the Pete Carroll liner from today, Dave, but Alex Collins is not guaranteed to play in week 7. He injured his back in the later phases of the game against the Steelers. So not only could Rashad Penny be activated, he may be activated as the immediate like bell cow. This is so exciting. I mean, Penny's my number 2 owned player across, you know, a 60 plus best ball team portfolio this year. I've just been taking zeros on him. Luckily, you know, Cooper Kupp's the only player and more of a roster more of. So, you know, those teams are very excited for Penny, but I mean, my love affair with Penny dates back, you know, to him as a prospect. And a lot of this is like, you know, it's a little bit of a hopeless romance that's kind of like one-sided. Like, I just see all his potential, but he's never like responded to all of my advances and like happen, like get, you know, just all of the opportunity. And I mean, the Seahawks, they're going to have something. They're going to have something, because with Geno Smith at, now granted, this against the Steelers, who are kind of in a desperate situation, that was an absolute must win for them at home against an opposing backup. They're playing in a very competitive AFC North division. That's a tough spot for Geno Smith to come into. They can keep this team at 500 without, you know, the offense making a shift. You know, Tyler Lockett, basically a non-factor. All of the timing that he has down with Russ definitely does not exist with Geno Smith. And the Seahawks didn't seem interested, or perhaps were unable to scheme touches, shorter touches for DK Metcalf in this game. So they need a running back that can blow up and be available for those little swing passes and those Texas routes. And so, you know, a 1-2 punch with Collins if he's healthy, or, you know, perhaps even just being a true bell cow for a couple of weeks while Russell Wilson heals up. Man, it's really exciting. I'm so glad you started with the Seahawks, because as depressed as I am, weapons, I'm a Penny.
Yeah, so you hit on the point there that I wanted to make, which was, we've seen Alex Collins looking good. Carson was playing well before. I think that it's fair to assume this is a team where if there's some room for back to get some opportunity, and he can capitalize on it with Penny coming back. You already have Carson, and then now Collins dealing with some injuries. There's a lot of runway it would look like for him to get back and make an impact. But what do you have for me over in AFC land?
Okay, so in the AFC, is Najee Harris now, is he going to be a league winner? I mean, with all of these round one running backs dropping like flies, and with Ben Roethlisberger, you know, I mean, he doesn't have Juju Smith-Schuster anymore. So, you know, there's no concern about touches going that direction. Doesn't seem to be able to pull down the field. So it's basically the Deontay Johnson and Najee Harris show in Pittsburgh, with all of the touches going to those two guys. And Harris, I mean, 24 sevens, another touchdown, nearly 25 PPR. I mean, this guy, it's not an efficient look. This is very rookie year Trent Rich, for those of you that have been playing that long. But it doesn't matter, because what does matter for fantasy purposes is that score that he's putting up, and no one's going to be eating into this workload. I mean, he looks very equal to the task. They're not taking away the high value touches when they get in close. And he's scoring receiving touchdowns. He could end up leading all running backs in targets this year. I mean, the way he's being used, it is absolutely crazy. So Pittsburgh is Najee's team. You know, it's also fun that, you know, Deontay Johnson is kind of back to his elite ways. But I really, it flows through Najee, and he was available in the second round, right up until the beginning of the season. I mean, very occasionally was like a 1-2 turn pick, but it really seemed to be falling into that, you know, 2-3 to 2-7 range. And man, for those teams that started in the first round with like Tyreek Hill there, or even for, you know, a running back heavy start in that range, would have looked something like Derrick Henry plus Najee Harris. That combination of players, Dave.
I mean, Najee, it is getting out of hand. I mean, to think the number of opportunities that he's seeing in comparison to other players is nuts. But when you go back and you look at things like high value touches, like we talked about last week, and they're pretty much all going through him, it's now like not only are the all of the quality touches really going through him, but pretty much like all of the touches in general. So yeah, I mean, backs to own right now, backs to roster, he's on the top of that list. So looking very exciting for him. I also think it's notable what you mentioned about Deontay Johnson too. So let's pop back over to the NFC. Next team that we're going to talk about, Daniel Jones's New York Giants, who we talked about earlier. And I wanted to bring this up because as you mentioned, Kadarius Toney looks like he could be struggling with some health issues. We know that pretty much the entire passing attack has been struggling with health issues, health concerns. Sterling Shepard comes back. He saw 14 targets in their game against the Rams. Now, New York's schedule is not setting up too easily. They have two games with Philadelphia still coming up, a team that's been very limiting in wide receivers as far as fantasy points go. Right now, though, I think that in that offense, Shepard is a player that's going to have to remain involved, has been able to do things with his targets, averaging 9 a game on the season when he's played, with 75 receiving yards, 0.2 touchdowns, 73 air yards, and 15.8 PPR per game. He's actually inside the top 20 right now. Now, as much of a dumpster fire as New York is looking like, I could be in the minority on this, Curtis, but I actually would be somewhat interested in making a play for Sterling Shepard, because I feel like at this point he's going to be so ingrained in that offense, and I actually do think that he has the skill to kind of turn that opportunity in a bad situation into serviceable fantasy points for a team. How crazy do you think that is?
Oh, I mean, I don't think it's crazy. Nothing's crazy in 2021, man. This is, I think he or she who reacts most quickly. I mean, that's almost more important than getting it right. Like just yep. continually churning and adjusting, because we're seeing like injuries are occurring at a higher rate. I don't know if that's actually true or not. Perhaps it's just the high profile injuries or the injuries to skill players. But I mean, the Giants wide receiver core seems to completely be flipped on its head nearly every week. But Kenny Golladay is not a lock to come back in week 7, nor is Darius Slayton. We don't have a prognosis on Kadarius Toney yet, but even if he is healthy, the team hasn't really driven looks anywhere else. I mean, Evan Engram was back. He was just completely, he never got going this week and doesn't look to be a part of the game, and it's completely starved for playmakers. So yeah, I mean, it kind of in the same way that Brandon Cooks has continued to produce at, you know, a pseudo elite rate for the Texans, despite Thursius and not having great quarterback play. I mean, I think that either Shepard or Toney or potentially both could continue to do that for the Giants. I don't mind that at all. He might be a player that an opponent manager is willing to move in a redraft scenario. He just doesn't really have that name brand appeal. I would be willing to take the shot, like trade like Allen Robinson for Sterling Shepard.
It's a great example.
Do that. You know what I mean? Like, so yeah, I'm very much on board with that, Dave. I think that's a sharp play. It's the type of play where it's not going to burn you, because Allen Robinson is just sitting there. You how much you spent to draft him, and it's very difficult to put him on your bench. But he also seemingly has very little ceiling, despite collecting like all the air yards. The Bears just don't seem to be able to put it all together. Whereas Shepard and Jones have shown that rapport in the past. Shepard actually. Right there for the best AYA for Daniel Jones this season, both actually with decent marks, over 9.5 AYA. And then in Daniel Jones's career amongst receivers with the least 50 targets with an 8.3 AYA. Next closest receiver is Slayton, but you know, over the course of the larger sample size, he's just at 7.7 AYA. So just speaking to the quality of that bat, that quarterback wide receiver, your battery, the suggestion.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. Glad that you are on board there. What else do we have going on in the AFC? So,
you know, what exactly the Browns, I need you to kind of almost talk me through it, man, because right. Listen, like Chubb's out, Landry's out, Baker destroys his left shoulder. Like, can you start any Browns? Like, let's just look ahead to Thursday night against the Broncos.
Yep.
Like, do you trust any Browns to start? If we know Hunt's probably going to hit IR. That's the update from today. Chubb I think it was presumed to be out. One of the reasons they sat him this week is maybe you get two sits for him really quickly. And, you know, in this, in the home tilt against Denver, you're hoping, you know, to squeak one out on Hunt's back, but you can't do that now. And Baker may be injured. I mean, who is startable in Cleveland? And if you're sitting here like as a Chubb or Hunt manager, I mean, what are you doing? Like, what do you do with Kareem Hunt in redraft? If he's expected to be out 4 to 7 weeks, can you afford to hold him all the way into your playoffs if your redraft league does not have an IR spot? I mean, this is a very difficult situation, and there just isn't a lot out there in terms of quality on the running back waiver wire. So it's tempting to hold, but at the same time, this is a starting spot that you've got to fill in the cracks for.
Yeah, man. I mean, this is a really, really tough one. So I guess the first place we need to start here is even in thinking about the Browns. If Baker is out, the backup is Case Keenum. In terms of, and I'll throw this back to you before I answer the rest of it, because maybe you have better intel on Keenum at this point than I do. Do you have any feel for how differently this offense would operate if Keenum's there, or if the team views him as a guy that they can do the same things with?
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that the offense is limited whatsoever. I mean, if anything, the offense is tailored to Baker's specific skill sets now. Yep. I mean, they still like to do play action rollouts, get Baker on the move. I mean, Baker is at his most dangerous when he's on the move, throwing, you know, really the intermediate or deep intermediate routes. I think Keenum can do a lot of that stuff, but I also think Keenum's better, maybe more accurate in terms of just sitting back there and peppering from the shotgun. But I also don't think that that's the way the Browns would want to play if they're forced to start Keenum.
Yep.
Way they would prefer to, if they were forced to start Keenum, would be to go with the run heavy attack. And I don't know if they have the horses to do it now. So, yep. I mean, I think the players to talk about that I would want to highlight when we're talking about the Browns, because these are players that I think you can make waiver wire plays for. One of the guys that's really popped in the last couple of weeks, and I think has an opportunity actually to be a big time dynasty mover over the next couple of weeks, is Donovan Peoples-Jones.
Yep.
You know, he didn't break out in college, despite being, you know, kind of a blue chip prospect at Michigan. Urban said that if Donovan Peoples-Jones didn't go to Michigan, he would have been a top 10 NFL draft pick. You know, that's a little bit sensational, but he is kind of playing like it. I mean, he definitely profiles differently than anybody else in the Browns wide receiver core, a size speed leaper, you know, almost in the mold of an AJ Green type player. And he posts a line of 480 and two, including an incredible catch at the end of the first half, a 66 yards in the air bomb from Baker to DPP. But especially if, you know, if Beckham's not at full strength, Or if Keenum were to start for a week or two, dynamics going on there. One, you know, the potential backup connection. Peoples Jones would have gotten more reps with Keenum in the offseason than he would have with Baker. And we see oftentimes when a backup comes in, he doesn't necessarily continue to target the same frequency of the starting quarterback. That happens nearly every year. But also, I mean, I think even if Mayfield continues to start, his utter lack of chemistry with crosses multiple seasons now. And for whatever reason, he and DP
with Melio, you can transfer and
throw. So, I think he is kind of, I mean, he's basically in must add territory. You got Adam. Beckham has a tendency to get hurt. We don't know specifically when Landry's coming back yet. And as long as the two of those players are not available, I think Peoples Jones is startable in any week that you look for Thursday night as a potentially spot starter at running back would be Dearness Johnson. We saw Dearness Johnson produce some pretty nice numbers. I think the Dallas game was one of those big games. But if he's just put in there as the bell cow, as long as the Browns get one or two of their tackles back, work could go Dearness Johnson's way. So I'd prioritize him that way from a waiver wire perspective, DPP, and then Johnson, just because I think DPP has more like season long appeal from here on out. Each position. You have a thought on either one of those guys, since we can't necessarily rely on Trevor Hunt with the Brownies?
Yeah, I think that I'm in agreement that Peoples Jones is the place that I would be more interested in going to first, because we've already seen him put some things together. I think that, like you said, when you're looking at the other receivers that are there, you can tell a compelling story that we're already seeing play out to a degree as to why he remains involved. I would avoid, this is my personal opinion here, but in a situation like this, I don't know if I would pop in the backup running back coming into the fold on that Thursday night match. Short week, especially with the way that we saw the Browns already look. I do think that he's a player worth adding, given that, running backs that are going to come into this type of opportunity are not a commodity that we commonly see at this point in the year. In relation to what you do with Kareem Hunt, I think at this point you keep him on your team. You take another 2 to 3 weeks to feel out the situation. Now, that's actually that's a really long time, though, on a team that might need those spots. So I'm actually going to answer this like this. If you're in the position where your team is kind of thin, you need to make moves, then I think that you really need to evaluate if there's other moves out there that sustain you and get you through those two to three weeks and position you for the playoffs. And you might actually have to let go of Hunt. If you have the depth and you're well positioned to make your way to the playoffs, then I think that you keep him. But it is kind of scary when you hear stuff like 4 to 7 weeks, because normally these things tend to go towards the end of that estimate. At which point, if you're sitting on him for the 7 weeks, you basically have sacrificed a pretty substantial spot on your roster. So to close that out, I guess my final thought there would be that if you do hold him the 2, 3, maybe even if you get to 4 weeks and it's looking like he's not going to be back to, the 7th week, don't get sucked into the idea that because you held on that long, you need to keep holding him. Like, it is okay to let go of great players if they're not able to contribute to your team.
Yeah, I think you summed that up perfectly there at the end. Let's kick it back to the NFC, Fave.
Yeah, sure. So the final team we're going to talk about is the Arizona Cardinals, because I wanted to take a little bit of a look here at how things have broken down in that receiving core thus far. Coming off of the weekend, we saw that ridiculous 2-touchdown performance for DeAndre Hopkins, some highlights, but he actually only had 4 targets. Now, when you're DeAndre Hopkins, you don't need a lot of targets. AJ Green, Curtis, 6 targets, 79 yards and a receiving touchdown. Christian Kirk actually led the team with 8. Of course, he also found the end zone, and Rondale Moore had just four targets. But on the year, we're seeing a couple of interesting things. Kyler Murray using his receivers in a fairly similar way. So DeAndre Hopkins, 6.3 targets. Christian Kirk, 5.2. AJ Green, 5.3. Rondale Moore, 4.7. So they're all seeing a fair amount of work. With Rondale Moore, one of the most interesting things is at this point, his air yards per target are just 2.5, but he's averaging 10.1 yards after the catch, which just speaks to the things that this guy can do and is another reason to be really encouraged about his career moving forward. The other note here is that DeAndre Hopkins is averaging one receiving touchdown per game, Christian Kirk half a touchdown, AJ Green half a touchdown, and Rondale Moore 0.2 of a touchdown. So I think that that really just speaks to how good Kyler Murray has been, how good this offense has been. And I think that on any given week, any of the four of these wide receivers can merit consideration for your lineup. Are they always going to hit? No. But the potential is there. So I just kind of wanted to quickly highlight that because it's kind of interesting how things have broken down for this team thus far.
Yeah. That's one of the games that I snapped for. And I was surprised to hear that Christian Kirk only had eight targets, because in that game, it actually felt like he had eight drops. He valued targets, but he also had some really frustrating drops too. And I think at some point during this season, now he's not being targeted in the same area of the field always. It does feel like he gets more intermediate level targets than Rondale Moore. Yep. But at some point I could see them kind of flip flopping in terms of Kyler's, preference. At some point he's not going to trust Kirk anymore in those tough spots. And last year at this time, the Steelers looked awesome. They were humming along, undefeated team, looked like the best offense in football. It's a long way between now and the end of the season. Seattle always looked great the season. In week 10, week 12, week 15, does the Arizona offense still operate this way and with this level of success and our target spread this way? When you watch the offense go, it's still very clear that DeAndre Hopkins is totally unguardable. And so you have to think that when they get into those spots, when a team can't hang with them, I bet the target distribution will look a little different. It's just the right now your scheme.
Yeah. All right. So,
let's go back over to the AFC. I got one more team. One more team I want to talk about.
All right, let's do it.
And there's a team we should talk a little bit more about, but then we can also talk about, the tertiary option and how disappointing it's being. So the number two, we're talking AFC, the number two wide receiver, in the AFC through 6 weeks, is Ja'Marr Chase. It's Ja'Marr Chase, the rookie Ja'Marr Chase. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. He's averaging 18.7 PPR. He's scored and he scored in all but one game. He's averaging 0.8 touchdowns rather. I think he does have a multi-touchdown game. But he's averaging almost a touchdown a game, and he's doing it on less than seven targets per game. I mean, his efficiency is just through the roof. The Bengals have done a decent job of spreading the ball around as well, but eventually you have to figure that efficiency is going to lead to even a higher target concentration. But Ja'Marr Chase is not disappointed. It kind of feels weird to draft him higher than T. Higgins leading into this season, just because Higgins looked so strong last year, had the year of NFL seasoning and just work with Joe Burrow, but that battery's picked right up where it left off at LSU between Chase and Burrow, and he looks like just an absolute premier dynasty asset. I think you're insane if you don't already value him as a top three wide receiver in dynasty. I know that we're going through our dynasty rankings updates, Dave, and I've got him in my top tier, along with Tyreek Hill and Justin Jefferson. I mean, it only took a month for him to reach those heights. But I think, when you look at the other pass catchers in Cincinnati it's pretty disappointing and disheartening. What we're seeing, Boyd is seeing six targets a game. You know, only a half target fewer per game than Jamar Chase, but he's turning that into just 10 and a half PPR per game. He's 3 yards per game. He only has one touchdown this season. And I mean, he's catching 74% of his targets, but it just doesn't matter. He's not. And the targets are down enough to basically render him as a replacement level flex player. And that's not what a lot of people thought. He was a value, you know, potential wide receiver three. That's not really the meaning of the old group of wide receiver four through six is, unfortunately, a third of the way into the season. Tyler Boyd is basically, you know, a close your eyes, cross your fingers, hope it's streamer and fantasy asset in 2021.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing is, one of the knocks on Boyd was a knock that I think a lot of people gave on Jarvis Landry for a long time, which was this guy's just a compiler. He needs high volume. He's putting it all together on short throws that are, you know, likely to be caught, but they're not really doing a lot. So you need to string together a high volume of these, which is fine because at the time it was happening. Fast forward now to 2021, and we're in this situation where, he might be being used in a way that's similar to how he was, but he's not being used often enough. And it's kind of rendered him not worthy of the draft capital that many managers invested into him. And then the other thing is we have CJ Uzomah scoring at a fairly frequent pace, touchdowns, yeah, which if they went to Tyler Boyd would allow him to recoup his value. But it's not looking like we're going to see a turn of the situation where Tyler Boyd starts scoring a lot of touchdowns, because we have other players, significantly Jamar Chase, doing it on long touchdowns, taking away that opportunity for it to happen. So disappointing on that front. I think at this point, clearly Chase has to be valued above Higgins. I think that Chase heading into next year in redraft is going to be one of the top guys, as you suggested, as people are working through the way that they're valuing players from a dynasty perspective. Jamar Chase needs to be right up at the top. As you said, you know, the efficiency is insane. He's doing everything that you want him to do with the work that he's getting. So very encouraging for him. I think that we've established that things are definitely bearish right now for Tyler Boyd. I think for Higgins too, he probably takes a little bit of a hit. Because you're going to have this delta between what people thought he was going to be in the beginning of the season, where he sits now. Final question for the show, Curtis. Do you think that that might present an opportunity where you could kind of buy him under value in Dynasty?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. It is a little dangerous, though, because the longer he's out and the longer Uzomah, you know, continues to produce, that gives the team a second kind of power. Mm-hmm. Scoring area of the field. And that's where Higgins, that's really the only place where Higgins has separated himself from Boyd, even in terms of production, because they're neck and neck in targets. They're neck and neck. And Higgins actually completing the catch on 10% fewer of his targets, but they're averaging the same number of receiving yards per game. I mean, for just 48. So it really just comes down to the fact that, you know, Higgins has scored two touchdowns in his four games played, and Boyd's only scored one in his six games played. So, but we also have Uzomah scoring three touchdowns across his six games. So, you know, of course he had a multi-touchdown, and he's doing a lot of this without Higgins in the lineup. But in terms of buying low, you know, I think in redraft, yeah, maybe. I mean, he's averaging 12.3 PPR game. That's, you know, that's flex start. It is kind of low end. Or middling wide receiver three level production in Dynasty, that's tough. I think Higgins managers were excited about his rookie season and are going to see what Joe Burrow is doing, that the offense is on the uptick. When you look around the NFL, there are plenty of offenses that support at least two wide receivers. You know, you think of what the Rams have done for several years with, you know, this year it's more Cup 1, Woods 2, but for the last handful of years, it's been a 1A, 1B situation. We've got the same thing going to CAF. We can kind of go around the league. There's, you know, Thielen and Jefferson, all kinds of Batman and Robin type stuff. So Higgins is still a great dynasty asset to be holding on to. The group that would likely be willing to move him might be those who just selected in their startup this past year and, you know, didn't spend a rookie pick on him and you know, just aren't quite as invested. So definitely there's a little bit, especially if that he is on a roster of a competing team. Maybe you can move somebody like an Adam Thielen and you know, a third or something like that. A player who's scoring a little bit more in 2021 if you're in you're a rebuilder. Don't necessarily think it makes sense to target him with the idea that he's going to help lead your team to victory in 2021, though.
Yes, fair enough. So we will close. I'm just going to mention two names. As I've been saying now every week, I don't even feel that I should be, that we should be even talking about the waiver wire, because if people are interested in the waiver wire, they need to go to RotoViz and check out Sam Wallace's article. Probably the deepest waiver wire article out there. I can't say I've looked at everyone, but I don't remember ever seeing any as in-depth as Sam's, where he lists as many players. So the two names I have for people out there, Pat Freiermuth, the rookie tight end, getting about seven targets a game in an offense now that is looking for production in the wake of Juju Smith-Schuster's season-ending injury. So he's a name to pay attention to. And then also Chris Evans, running back on Cincinnati, who might be able to carve out more of a role as things move forward. If you caught any of the action this weekend, you might have heard his name once or twice. So we will be back later in the week. Appreciate everybody hanging out with us. And hopefully, after Monday night wraps up, your teams are in the win column. Thank you for listening to the RotoViz Fantasy Football Show. Send us questions at rvffshow@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at DaveCabinFF and at CPatrickNFL. Leave us a voicemail at 978-615-9214. And make sure to rate, review, and subscribe.